Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way.
Hey. Welcome, this is brother Jay.
And this is Drew.
And tonight, we are going to talk about the 2015 movie Legend. Starring.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite Tom Cruise movie ever.
Tom Cruise?
Mm-hmm. Tom Cruise, Mia Sara, Tim Curry as the big demon dude.
You're funny. So, Tom Hardy as Double Bill, Reggie, and Ronnie Cray, the Cray boys. Emily Browning, Taron Egerton. That's where I recognize him from. I didn't know that was Taron Egerton.
Elton John himself.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that makes some sense. Okay. Not a lot of other people I recognized, but voices seemed really familiar for plenty.
I mean, there's David Thewlis from the Harry Potter movies. Who Chaz Palminteri was in it for a couple minutes. you had a doctor from Doctor Who, Christopher Eccleston, also from Thor: The Dark World, I believe.
Written by Brian Helgeland of, we've already discussed the
conspiracy theory.
Yes.
You know who else is in this besides a really brief appearance by Paul Bettany? A throwback to the early 2000s, the early aughts, Duffy.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down. I really love Duffy.
She's got a great voice.
She may be the best thing in this movie, next to Tom Holland's giant acting.
Oh, no. I'll spoil it now. There's so many things I love about this movie.
So written and directed by Brian Helgeland, co-writing credit goes to John Pearson, based on the book. I just lost the book, of course, because I switched screens, but whatever, people can look it up. I really can't be bothered.
We got stuff to do, people.
Yeah. I'd never seen this before. I saw it in my queue. I don't know if it was newly released or, the whole, hey, this might be in your wheelhouse that Netflix tries to do, but I noticed it on Netflix and I thought, well, this is interesting. And I like the British somewhat and I like Tom Holland and this is the past and it's mobby and it kind of has all the elements of a crime story. And so it has kind of everything that I like in a movie, in theory. And not realizing it was about the Cray brothers, I just thought, wow, this looks fun. So I dove into it.
I have to tell you, this is not even the first movie about the Cray brothers I've ever seen.
There are a couple I've come to find out. I've never seen them.
There is a Bananas movie from the early 90s where the Crays are played by Spandau Ballet.
I read that. Which is, I mean, I guess it's a paycheck, right?
Yeah. I mean, they weren't bad. They weren't great, but.
So I'd never seen this before I actually watched it Wednesday. And it's a longer movie. It's a little over 2 hours, 2 hours 10, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Jesse watched it with me. Boyfriend Jesse watched it. I think he liked it as much as I did. I actually did like it. It was a good movie. So I'm glad I watched it. I'm really curious when I go back. I'll need a couple years before a rewatch because it's not bereft of violence. So it's not gratuitously violent. It's not a Tarantino film.
There's one bit of violence in this movie that I found particularly displeasing, and it occurs off screen. But the rest of it was, like typical gangster stuff.
What appears off screen?
It's between Reggie and Francis.
Oh, yeah, there's that. Yeah, that was unnecessary, but I mean, I understand it. Dramatic tension. I don't know if, and again, I don't know how much of this movie is true. Again, it's a movie, so it's got dramatic license, poetic license, and, of course, it's written by a crazy guy. So, well, different. I won't call him crazy. I'll just say he's got a very different style to him, judging from conspiracy theory of the movie. I don't know. I liked it. It is as typically in the wheelhouse of movies I like, a beautiful movie. Physically, it just looks, it's gorgeous. The aesthetic was good. The sets were good. The acting was good.
Yes, it was.
And even the soundtrack was good. The soundtrack was very captivating to me, which is another element that I really appreciated. So you've seen this movie more than once, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I don't even remember how I saw it the first time. I think it was like a flipping channels kind of thing, and it was playing on HBO. So I may not have caught the very first part of it. But yeah, I watched it, and as soon as you figure out that Tom Hardy is playing two different characters, like there's no way you cannot finish this movie.
And the brothers are twins, but distinct.
Very distinct. It's right into Tom Hardy's wheelhouse because, if there's whatever you say about Tom Hardy, you can always count on him making some choices.
I can't deny that.
And it's wild to me, especially like how huge he is nowadays. Like he's a like broad shouldered buff dude. The first time I ever saw him was when he had pretty jacked up teeth and he was playing a Jean-Luc Picard clone.
Okay, so the synopsis is from IMDb, so I'm going to rip them off because I had high aspirations. And I thought, I'll go back and watch this again and write up a synopsis and be really, really proactive. That didn't happen, so.
Well, I mean, you can, a lot can be said if you know the sort of what the commentary was about this movie when it came out. And it's that Brian Helgeland was paying a strong homage, if not straight ripping off Scorsese with this movie. This is obviously Brian Helgeland's version of Goodfellas. Because it's almost, the first two thirds of this movie are almost beat for beat, including, voiceover and, showing a lot of the movie from the girlfriend's perspective.
Yeah, but this movie was prettier than Goodfellas.
You think?
I do. But it may have been also the prism of, Goodfellas was in the 80s, right? 80s, 90s?
90s. Yeah, maybe 1990.
Yeah, so this has the benefit of being new.
Sure.
And tonally, it sounded better, probably also because I could understand the actors better than I could understand watching Goodfellas. And there wasn't nearly the amount of swearing in this one that there was in Goodfellas.
That is true.
So there's some noticeable differences. I want to say Goodfellas was in the theater when I worked there.
That would have been the right time.
Because I want to say I've I've heard the end of that damn movie like a billion times. Isn't it an Eric Clapton song that closes that?
It's the piano part of Layla, yeah.
Yeah, with the seagulls, right? Or whatever the fuck it is. God, I hate just, ah. Yeah, okay. So yes, that all makes sense. I have a negative association with that movie. So yes, that movie like lasted forever. It never went away. It stuck around. It was in the big house. It was in the second biggest house. And then it was in the third house. And then it went to the middle two theaters, which is the smallest of the two. And it stayed there for I don't know how long.
That sounds right.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, okay. Synopsis. Opens Reggie Cray coming out of an apartment in East London and bringing a cup of tea to two policemen. And he gives total shit to the policeman, which I thought was pretty funny. Pretty much acknowledging that I know you're watching me and I'm just going to make fun of you and insult you. And, you know, do you want a cup of tea? And of course they're like telling him to fuck off. But
Reggie is the more suave of the brothers, and he is very, very charismatic.
Yeah, he's very stylish. He mm-hmm. is a dapper man.
Everybody is charmed by Reggie.
Yeah. Also, this is where we have the appearance of a Ford Galaxy. That was fun to see. Yeah. And it was left-hand drive.
Yeah, pretty wild.
As was Reggie's Lincoln was a left-hand drive. So those are just little things I noticed. We get a narration that is talking that introduces us to Nipper the cop and gives us some backstory and Reggie's kind of making his way down the street and greeting people. And it's clear that he's of the neighborhood as he's giving people money and engaging people and talking to them. And he knows the cops are following him. And so he's just kind of sashaying around and making sure that the cops can stay on him. Right.
Yeah. He's walking so that they don't have to drive very fast.
Let's see. I guess they're trying to get I guess Nipper and the other cop are trying to watch him maybe to get one of Reggie's associates, maybe. Reggie's going down to get Frank, right? Who didn't show up.
Yeah, Frankie.
Frank or Frankie? Because isn't it Frankie Francis?
I think they're
this
both.
This is where I stumbled because it was Francis and Frankie.
Yes.
Except that in America, Frankie would be female usually.
Yeah, I mean, so, and they call Francis Frankie at some points during the movie.
So it was very. I kept having a hard time. That kept tripping me up because I kept thinking, no, this isn't Ronnie's boyfriend. So anyway, they go to get Frank, and he bumps into Francis.
Mm-hmm.
Because Francis is all grown up, and he is. Smitten, and she's kind of nonplussed by him, though, I think.
Yeah, so Francis is also very charming. People just they gravitate towards her, too. And she's very young. She's like a teenager entering college at this point, right?
Yeah. I think she's just of age, I think, is what they intimate.
Yeah.
Reggie gives Frank some grief about not showing up to work on time. He kind of flirts with Francis a whole lot. And then he and Frank take off. But Reggie's like, I'm coming back for her sometime.
Yeah, they share a lemon sweet, which was real gross.
Oh, yeah. It was. Yeah, it was gross. I think they call it a lemon sherbet.
Yes. Yeah, hard candy that they both partake in.
Yeah, they share it. They swap it. Blah! Yeah, that was pretty cringy.
But everyone's cool with it because Reggie is so charming. And okay. Also has probably committed lots of murders.
I mean, it's Tom Hardy, so I don't know. Maybe that helped. So there's some interchange. Francis and Frankie's mom do not like Reggie, and she is not shy about espousing her opinion at all. She is very vehement that he's a bad seed. He's, you know, he's mafia. He's bad. He's bad. He's not somebody you should be taken up with. And Francis is like, I love him, right?
Yeah,
it's that teenage rebellion.
Yeah, no, and normally I would side with the mom here, because yeah, you don't want your young daughter, you know, dating a ne'er-do-well, right? I have some emotional baggage with this actress, because she played a character in Game of Thrones who committed one of the most heinous acts in the entire run of the show.
Oh, okay. I have not seen it, so I will I'll take your word for it. Reggie and Frank and somebody else drive through the city, and then they run through some alleys to get away from their tail. And the cops realize it's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, they make fools of the police several times throughout this movie.
Then we cut to Ronnie.
In a mental institution.
Yeah, and they make the pretty big... I mean, they're obvious about he's got issues. That Ronnie is... they actually come out and say, when Ronnie Cray said something isn't interesting... When Ronnie Cray said something is interesting... It means he has no idea.
Yeah, he's either bipolar or has schizophrenia, or maybe both, right? He's unstable.
He's got issues.
Mm-hmm.
I think in those days they just said he had a screw loose.
Yeah,
many of them.
Yeah, and there's a scene where one of their enforcers is threatening Ronnie's psychiatrist in order to have the psychiatrist give him a favorable report, and the way that threat is carried out is so entertaining. And like it it's pretty early on, and it sets a really fun tone for this movie.
Yeah, because they threaten a lot of violence, and Reggie's very suave, because he doesn't really want to get his hands dirty, and he really doesn't want to be beating people up. So he gives it till the last possible moment, mm-hmm. and then he'll beat the crap out of you. But he gives you every last opportunity. He really wants to make it seem like he's really the good guy, and that he's having to do this for your own good.
Indeed.
Which is, you know, that's gaslighting star behavior right there. Yeah, so Ronnie gets released from a psychiatric facility that he's been deemed insane in. He wants the shrink to declare him sane, and does, and gets released. And the psychiatrist gives him some pills and says he needs to keep on these pills, or you're going to have trouble. You're probably going to have trouble with him anyway, but the pills might help a little bit. And then we move forward to Reggie picks up Francis for a date. And her mother is not happy at all.
Yes.
And Reggie takes Francis to the East End Club, where he explains that he owns it. He's not a gangster. He's a club owner. He just wants to have people to have a good time.
Yeah. And then he leaves her at the table alone to go do some gangster shit.
Yeah. I thought it was very interesting that he has somebody sit at the table with her when he gets up.
You want someone to keep your date company, right?
I guess maybe if you're the evil ringleader, that works for you, because you have authority over the underlings, and they're going to have a fear of you not to like swoop in on your girl.
Yes. But
in the real world, I don't know that you'd want a wingman to come in and swoop up and take your girl from you like that. So, or potentially take your girl from you. But I guess in this case, you're not going to cross Reggie, because, you know, he's just going to put his thumbs in your eyes. So Reggie goes and does business, even though he's like, I don't have any business. I'm on a date. Like, this can't be important enough. And they're all like, oh, no, this is important. He's like, no, this is not important. My date is important. So Reggie does have a fairly decent relationship compass. Mm-hmm. At the moment, he's focused on Francis, and he doesn't like being detracted from that. That's his focus, except when it's not. And his compass kind of loses north pretty quickly.
Yeah, because he has to go deal with one of their pill dealers who has been skimming
and drunk and waving guns around and being blah, blah, blah. And so there's a big escalation of a scene, and Reggie's like, I don't want to do it. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to hurt you. And then beats him in the face, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And turns out this character, I don't even know what this guy's name was. McVitty or something.
Yeah.
His character is...
guy, by the way.
Well, yeah, because he's important.
Yes.
He plays a significant role in the story of the craze.
Turns out... Yeah, so Francis confronts Reggie and asks him how he likes being a gangster, and he says, he's a club owner. and then sometime, and it's unclear the transition in time, it was really difficult. I had a hard time, no pun intended, with this movie, because it's hard to tell when you're moving through time how far you're advancing, if it's minutes, hours, or days.
Yeah, they're not clear.
And I don't think it's important, but it was just a distraction. Because next thing we see, they end up, Reggie takes Francis to meet Ronnie, who's like living in what the British would call a caravan, a camper van, a little fifth wheeler, right?
Mm-hmm. Out in the woods.
Which was, I guess that was so he could boink boys and get away with it. And there was nobody can hear the screams or something. I don't know. Reggie and Ronnie, Reggie's kind of trying to push Ronnie into Francis into being friends. And so he says, I'll go get drinks or tea or whatever. And Ronnie just comes out and says, well, I'm a homosexual.
he's this movie is set in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
So not necessarily a friendly time to be a homosexual, but Ronnie is very proud of it. He's very open about it.
Well, I mean, it's post Alan Turing, so I mean, I guess there's that.
Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, no, not a real progressive time. But if you're the mafia, I guess nobody's probably going to mess with you, right? Especially if you're one of the Cray boys.
Especially the crazy one.
Yeah. I mean, because they make the point that spoilers. Later in the movie, when the American Mafia comes and Ronnie confesses to the American Mafia that, oh, no, he likes boys. And at first, the Mafia guy's taken very aback, and then he's like, well, good for you. Like, okay.
Yeah, that's a real tight summary there. He did more than say, I like boys.
Yeah, we'll watch the movie. There's things that I don't want to repeat.
What Tom Hardy's doing with his face when he's playing Ronnie.
Moon lips.
Yeah. I mean, he's like jutting out his lower jaw and like he's mouth.
Very uncomfortable.
He's mouth breathing the whole time and jutting out his bottom lip so you can see his lower teeth at all times.
He had a different posture too.
Yeah, I mean, God bless Tom Hardy.
He did a good job. He gave it his all.
He's Tom Hardy is such a lunatic. I love it.
God love him though.
I mean,
because you have to admit this was an amazing performance, a dual performance.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's probably no way this movie would ever interest you, but I would recommend watching the movie Venom just for Tom Hardy's performance. He's very funny. And what he's doing with his voice in that movie is so funny.
We already saw Venom in a movie, right?
Venom.
No, we saw, what's his face? It's like when Tom Hardy was Kane or something.
Oh, Bane.
Who was Tom Hardy?
Bane.
Yes.
Yes.
Which he was doing a voice there too.
Yep.
I have to put that out of my mind or I will laugh for about a half an hour. The most ridiculous voice ever.
It's so funny. You know,
Tom Hardy did a lot of work. I mean, different facial expressions, like puffy baboon lips. He wore glasses and Reggie didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a different posture. The boys had a different posture from one another.
A different voice. Physically,
a different voice, different walking, different. I mean, he did a really great job. I mean, I'm sure there was some coaching, but yeah, he kept it straight. So I don't know if like they filmed all one character first and they filmed all one character, the other character next, or if they did scenes interspersed, which I would think would be exhausting.
That's what I hope happened. I hope they were like, cut. And then he just like combed his hair, threw on glasses and did the baboon face. And was like, okay, let's go.
And then in the next scene, so moving on, we start to see kind of the turf wars between Reggie and Ronnie's territory and the other territories that are on, because they're not the only mob game in London or the area of the UK, because they're what, East End, right, I think.
Yeah, and they're rivals. They need to hire someone to be in charge of their branding, because their rivals were, their name was the Torture Gang.
I mean, a little on the nose, I suppose, right?
Yeah, led by Vision himself, Paul Bettany. Not a good look for Jarvis there.
Yeah. So there's a dust up, and they kind of, it's clear that tensions get escalated when there's a successive ramp up of violence and interaction, which culminates in Ronnie and Reggie going to meet on, I guess, supposedly neutral ground, was it?
Yeah, it was supposed to be.
And I wasn't sure what was going to happen, because the two of them just walk in the bar by themselves, and there's a bunch of opponents ostensibly, right?
Yeah, it turns out the bar is not filled with patrons. The bar is filled with people who are going to tune up the Cray brothers.
And the bartender is immediately like, I'm going to go change the line out on the tap. I'll be down in the basement hiding. Let me know when it's over. And then, so they're in the bar, they're kind of talking about, it's a bunch of BS basically, because Reggie and Ryan know that they're there basically to get beaten up, really, or taken out either way. But Ronnie is not to be underestimated, I believe, because he pretends he has guns in his coat and the old.
Do you think that was pretend?
Yeah, because he has hammers later.
Yeah, I don't think he had. I've seen it twice now. I still have no idea if he was pretending or not. He seemed genuinely upset that no one else had a gun.
He was kind of angry. He was indignant.
He was pissed that
nobody else had guns in the gunfight.
They brought like what, a pipe in their fist to a gunfight, and he actually like storms out in a huff while Reggie is like still trying to get his pint of Guinness. It was a very, very funny scene.
It was hilarious and tension building.
Mm-hmm. But Reggie was, you know, cool as a cucumber, because he knew he had Ronnie on his side, and Ronnie's a freaking lunatic.
Yes. And so things kind of escalate, and they start beating up Reggie, and Ronnie comes in, gets handed a claw hammer, and starts assaulting people with a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is some hardcore stuff. I mean, that's like horror movie kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's, for a weapon, like for a normal item turned into a weapon, I think a claw hammer is even more threatening than like a kitchen knife.
I think so too.
A claw hammer is hardcore.
Yeah, yeah, because it's going to do some damage to open you up, and then it's going to do some damage to pry you up.
Mm-hmm. Fun scene with hammers in The Raid 2.
I'll put that in my notes. And then, of course, there's some what I assume are brass knuckles, and Ronnie and Reggie pretty much take care of business.
Yes, they do. They send the Torture Gang across the river, right?
Yeah.
There's no more territorial clash.
Yeah. Problem solved. You lose. Go away. Don't come back. Stay over there. You stay in your lanes. The Clawhammer. Oh. And here's where we, here's where the mafia come. Oh, well, it's Pain, right? Pain tells the boys that the mafia want to make an entreaty into the UK. And that casinos are a good way for them to hide and launder money. And so this would be a good opportunity for them to expand. Casinos are very lucrative and obviously fairly well misunderstood financially. So.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of did their back and forth. They're like, I don't know, the mafia and the casino. But they're like, okay, well, we'll talk to him. Ron is less interested. Ronnie's less interested in working with them. Reggie seems to be iffy. But they decide to set up the movie anyway. And then we go forward a little bit. And it turns out they're making plenty of money with the mafia as it goes through.
They sure are.
They're just kind of, they're just kind of going through things and they've got some money laundering and some good rackets going on. And, but now Reggie has to go back to jail to finish his sentence.
Yeah. Francis is not too thrilled about that turn of events.
Can't imagine why you would be. I also don't understand what this was. So he was out on appeal, but it got turned out that the trouble was legitimate, so he had to go back and finish his sentence.
Yeah, he had been sentenced and was appealing the verdict, and so yeah, he was out on appeal, and his appeal was finally either his case was either upheld or the appeal was denied. So he had to go serve 6 months.
So Frances is, you're right, she's not happy. He's gone, and she in his first day in. He gets beaten by the guards, but then has a pretty good turn of events. Beats the cop brutal. It was very a little disquieting. But then Ronnie tells Frances not to go see Reggie. But of course, that just makes her want to go see Reggie all the more. So she goes and sees him. And of course, he's still bearing the marks of the fight. And so she wants to know what's happened. And he said, don't worry about it. It is what it is. Don't worry about it. You can't do anything about it. Also, I got even, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. The cop is still there sporting some giant gashes on his head.
In the meantime, Ronnie is trying to run the business his way, and he and Payne are clashing, and Payne is like, you don't understand how this business works. You need to be a little more conservative. We can't do what you're doing. And Ronnie really doesn't like that. Ronnie really doesn't like Payne. He takes a very severe dislike to Payne, which is funny and irony when you Payne being what it is. And then we get some strange sex scandal scenes with members of parliament because Ronnie is also cavorting with a minister of the parliament, I believe. Boothby, right?
Yes.
And well, there are some sex parties.
Several members of parliament, actually.
Yeah. And so it's like a big sex soiree. And I'm assuming the prime minister, well, I don't know if that was the prime minister or whoever, the must have been the leader of the Labour Party or what, who was trying to get dirt so that he could turn the election and make sure that he won. But then as it turned out, both sides were at the sex party and he said, well, this isn't any good. I can't use this scandal if we're both implicated. What the hell? Like, don't you know how to manufacture a better scandal?
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that was the prime minister.
Yeah. So Ron is pretty much, he's kind of tanking the business.
Yeah, he's running the club into the ground.
He's running people away. He's singing in the club on his own, which is cringy.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing comedy, which is cringy. His boyfriend, boy toy thing. who I wanted to kill immediately from the first part of the movie.
You wanted to kill Sir Elton?
He was just a yes man. He was just laughing hilariously, annoyingly the whole time.
He knew his place.
Yeah, I know. He was working hard for the money. So hard for it, honey. See, Brother E, I can fill in sometimes.
he had more personality than the other boy toy.
Yes. Well, yeah. Yeah. He hadn't been hit in the head with the claw hammer, so
that's true.
So the police had been trying to bust the craze, but now they couldn't, because as it turns out, the craze happened to have some good blackmail material. And so then the investigator that is investigating them gets shut down. Not only because the craze have manufactured photos of the cop with the craze and it makes it look bad for Scotland Yard. And so they're told to back off. They're not going to investigate the craze right now. And then Reggie gets out. And we have a pretty... It's a pretty rough scene.
The fight between the brothers?
Yeah, Reggie and Francis come back to the club where Ronnie is. And the club's empty. It was either a Friday or Saturday night, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Reggie was incredulous as to, how is this place empty? What have you done? Well, he's run everybody off. And then they have a huge fight. Physical manifestation. And Ronnie is just vicious to Francis. Just.
Ronnie fights dirty.
Yeah. And so Francis takes off and they have a big knockdown, drag out fight. It's pretty, pretty significant. But Reggie's the victor, which Ronnie didn't take very well.
Yeah. I mean, the fight was pretty brutal, but it was also funny because at one point Ronnie grabbed a bottle and, you know, it's sort of like the little kids like, nope, not in the face, not in the face. Because Reggie's like, nope, not bottles, not bottles. And then he puts the bottle down.
Yeah. And then he grabs him in the crotch. So.
Yes. Yep. Ugh.
Not the jewels. And then as the mob escalates their business in the UK or with the UK, it's unclear if they're doing business in the UK or if they're just using the UK as a money laundering to run the money through the UK enterprises to make more money or to launder and redistribute the money.
Yeah. I mean, they're certainly using the craze to cash in the bearer bonds. And I think it's suggested that they wanted to expand their business, into the UK market, but they weren't going to as long as Ronnie was around.
Yeah, because Ronnie was pretty adamant that he wanted things his way.
Mm-hmm. And he was very visible and well known. Like Angelo said, he does not want their business partners to be famous.
Which is how the mafia survived in America under the radar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but in the UK, they are famous gangsters. And they just operate in the open, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, they are very businesslike about paying off the cops, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So things kind of escalate. And, you know, the mob is more and more demanding of Reggie. So Reggie's spending less and less time with Francis. And so Francis is having to spend time with Reggie and Ron's mom. Who they aren't very nice to her at all. You know, she can't cook. She can't make a proper cup of tea. But good is she.
They feel sorry for Reggie.
Yeah. So she turns to drugs to kind of cure her depression and malaise. Ronnie's not taking his medicine, which isn't a good thing. And then things kind of escalate out of control. Ronnie kind of ramps up into more and more volatility. And then Ronnie has an outburst and he goes after one of their protectees comes to him and says he was attacked by one of the other opposing gangs.
The torture gang's enforcer dude with the weird hair.
Ronnie's like, well, I'll kill him. I'll just go kill him. And he's like, oh, no, no, that's not what I wanted. You don't want me to kill him? Now you're saying you don't want me to. So he just turns it all, just gaslights him completely and makes him pay for the assassination.
Yes, that he didn't want to have happen in the first place.
It's such a great turn of manipulation. I had to admire the audacity, but I think Ronnie really believes in his crazy mind that that was legit. So he walks into a bar full of people and shoots him right in the head, kills him in a bar full of people with witnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's nuts.
And then he goes home to mom. It's crazy. So Reggie finds out, and Reggie goes and he's like, can we talk about what just happened? Maybe, so there's some tension and Reggie has to figure out how to kind of circumvent the legal process where Ronnie will get implicated by this, and through some intimidation and some witness tampering, they basically skate Ronnie out of the problem, right?
Yes. Nipper just loses his shit about it.
Yeah, not much they can do. And Francis gets more and more despondent because Reggie's never there. And it's obvious that, you know, he's just going to continue with what he's doing.
And more she's using Mother's Little Helper, right?
Yeah, that's right. And other things.
Mm-hmm. So Reggie is focusing more and more on his gangster business, and Francis is feeling more and more isolated and alone. And he buys her a car, even though she doesn't know how to drive, and promises to teach her how to drive, but never really gets around to it. So
I don't think he does. That car never moves, right?
Never. Yep.
It was sad.
And one day he comes home, he's already drunk, it's raining, she's trying to put the top up, and she kind of lets him have it about, you know, what a bad husband he's being.
Yeah.
And he responds by going into their apartment and beating her, and it's not explicit, but it's suggested that also raping her, right?
Yeah, assaulted her.
Yeah. So, you know, up until this point, like, Reggie is like a really charming protagonist. Like, you're rooting for him.
Yeah.
You don't want bad things to happen to him, even though he's a bad guy. But yeah, after he does that to Francis, that's sort of like all out the window. At that point, you're waiting for his downfall, because now he has to get what he deserves.
Yeah. He's just full of villainy at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He's irredeemable.
Yes. It's the perfect word for it. And it was really jarring, because I really liked Reggie up until that point. And he'd been neglectful, but he'd always been very loving towards Francis, right?
Yeah. Well, he was very attentive. I mean, when he was there, he was attentive, and he made sure that she was taken care of, and he didn't tolerate other people disrespecting her. And she was well kept, I guess. But, you know, a gilded cage is still a cage, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
but so, from her
not okay her perspective, not okay, Reggie.
No. Definitely, it was a very sour note to a very robust performance up to that point. So yeah, it's hard to have any sympathy anymore at that point for Reggie at all. He does become irredeemable.
Yes.
And she, you know, I think she moves out, right?
Yeah, she leaves him. She
moves in with Frank,
and brother. On her way out, she actually has a nice touching scene with Ronnie, who she never really liked.
Yeah. And he professes that he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
Which is goofy, because he doesn't like her. And he's happy that she's leaving, even though he says he's not. But it's obvious that he is. He gets his brother back.
Yeah.
Yep. And so Reggie comes back to to Francis and says, you know, I'll make it up to you. I'll make right by this. And, you know, we'll go to Ibiza. We'll go where you want to, and we'll do this thing. And she realizes that she's never going to be free, that this is going to be her life.
Mm-hmm.
And so she decides it's not going to be her life, and she kills herself.
A very tricky thing to do, since she has been sort of omnisciently narrating the movie the entire time and continues to do so.
It was an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
But, and Reggie is suitably upset. I mean, you know, he doesn't take responsibility as much as I think we know he's responsible. I don't think everybody else in the movie realizes how responsible he really is for her downfall, but he is, without him, she would be alive.
So, yeah, and he's told as much by her mother when she catches him visiting her grave, right?
Yeah, and they have that scene. I mean, they have that scene before she's buried about he puts the wedding ring on her finger and, you know, tries to humanize him, but he's already done. He's already an asshole. He's done the damage. Like,
yeah,
you can't go back.
Yeah, it is his fault. Nice, I mean, I don't want to side with the mother because, you know, her other daughter in that other show, she had burned at the stake. So, you know, she's really living in a glass house here, but she's right.
Yeah. Well, and even him trying to be sweet after she's dead doesn't redeem him. It doesn't make up for his bad deeds and driving her to kill herself. And you could make the case that when she was depressed and she had other issues, but yeah, I'm like, he accelerated them and neglected her. So,
and her brother still has to work for him closely.
Yeah. 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 And then in a twist that I didn't, which was, apparently true part of the story, but for some unknown reason, Ron hires the crazy Jack dude to kill Leslie Payne.
Yeah. They're like, crooked business manager. He never liked him. He always thought that he was up to no good, and he didn't like that Reggie let him into so much of the business in the first place. And he always thought that Leslie was going to be the one to turn them in and bring them down.
And then that great scene where Reggie pretty much excoriates Ronnie. Like, you think he knows everything? Everybody knows everything. And then he goes through the whole room like, don't you know about this? And don't this guy know about this? And doesn't this guy know about all the bodies are buried? And blah, 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 right? So,
yes, I would not want to be any of those people at that moment.
No.
Telling Ronnie, like, yes, I know all this stuff.
Yeah, I'm the liability.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now you're now in the circle of prey. Is what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie coerces Jack to kill Payne with not a lot of money, seemingly, for a murder. But I guess he's kind of a junkie and a ne'er-do-well and a loser and struggling constantly. So I guess maybe it must be a lot of money for him.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of money considering you can't say no to Ronnie anyway.
That's true. And Jack tries to kill Payne, but doesn't manage to be able to accomplish it and injures him and flees. And of course, now Payne's like, oh yeah, okay, we're done. Oh yeah, I'm going to tell everybody. I'm going to squeal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, protect my family and my kids. You know, we're going to go away, but I'm done. Like, you can have all the secrets. So the Enterprise is going to come down.
Yeah, Nipper is finally going to get his man.
Then there's was it a Christmas party? I couldn't tell what kind of party it was. It was some kind of party.
Yeah, it looked like a Christmas party.
At Ronnie's flat. Mm-hmm. And Reggie's there hanging out in the corner.
And they know at this point, because of their moles in the police department, they know that they're going down, that Payne has squealed, that they've scooped up a bunch of other lieutenants who are also turning evidence. They got the barmaid who witnessed Ronnie murder that dude, who recanted. She has recanted. So they, Reggie at least knows that they're about to be arrested in the near future here.
Ronnie's in his typical oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
And Reggie's at the party and he seems kind of subdued in the corner, but you can tell he's agitated. You can tell he's got that simmering rage. He's not pissed yet, but he's mad. It's there. It's just ambient in the room with him. It's almost like his companion at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's already unmoored because of Francis. And now he knows that his gangster empire is crumbling.
Yeah. He's going to go to jail probably. Probably soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jack walks in and he is a smug bastard at this point.
Yeah, I don't get it. What did he think he was doing?
I don't know. I think the audience is to believe that he's so addle-minded, either through drugs or alcohol, that it just never occurred to him. Like he would have the protection of Ronnie. Except Ronnie won't protect anybody but his brother or himself.
Right.
But really, just himself. Ronnie doesn't really care about anybody. He cares about his brother, but only as much as it helps him.
Yeah. Ronnie's a psychopath.
And tensions escalate. And then Reggie just goes a whole ham and just stabs the bejesus out of Jack.
With a broken glass, right?
It was crazy. In the middle of a party.
Mm-hmm.
Full of people and witnesses. But he doesn't, he's clearly in that rage that is unleashed. It's like, it's his falling down moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
He just lets it all, he's like, nope, this is all, everything I've ever been angry at is going to get expunged from my body right now. And just brutal.
Blaze of glory.
Oh, man. And so, I mean, he's not, I don't think Jack's dead yet, although he dies pretty quickly, I'm sure. And then eventually Jack ends up like in a car in front of a church somewhere, which was fairly accurate, I'm told. And eventually Ronnie and Reggie end up arrested and in jail, in prison, convicted.
Well, Ronnie went to a mental hospital, right?
Of course he did. Yeah. And Reggie went to prison.
Yeah, and Ronnie died incarcerated at the mental institution, and Reggie only reason he didn't die in jail is because he was given a mercy release so he could die of cancer.
Not in jail.
Yeah. So he was freed for like, what, 8 weeks before he died?
Something like that. Yeah, a couple months. The British justice system is different than ours because I don't think we give those kinds of releases in our prisons. I think you're just in jail. You just die there. But yeah. And so that's the movie close. Just these graphics of, they're convicted and they both die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned it's a 2 hour plus movie, but, I thought it was paced really well. I didn't feel it was dragging at any point. I watched it in one sitting, which is pretty good for me. This is a fun movie to watch. I don't know why it just kind of disappeared when it came out.
2 hours, 12 minutes.
Yeah. But Tom Hardy. I love Tom Hardy. He always gives you your money's worth no matter what.
Yeah. I did not know anything about this movie. Oh, it opened. It came out on the day before my birthday in 2015. Nice. Estimated budget of $30 million, worldwide gross of $42 million. So it was decent. A decent return. I'll go through my notes here real quick. We already talked about that. Oh yeah, Ronnie had double hammers. I wrote double hammers. Wow. And then I wrote, Rhonda stand-up. Ooh, this is cringy. Where's Pauly Shore when you need him?
He was still better than Pauly Shore.
And then I wrote, I love Duffy.
She's great.
In my notes. She was great. She was a real highlight in this movie because she was totally different than everything else in the movie.
Yeah. And to have, have her be like the diegetic music is wonderful.
It was a little disorienting to have her in the movie because it was such a bright spot in a movie that was so dark. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like she was just stunt casted. And maybe she was.
Oh, she absolutely was. I mean, you might as well put Adele in your movie to be a lounge singer, right?
I guess. I mean, yeah. Somebody dubbed this the Hardy Twins. So as far as I'm concerned, this is an A movie. I mean, this is a good movie. This is well crafted. it moves. It was captivating. It was pretty. The plot and dialogue worked. The scenes worked. It wasn't clunky. I didn't feel patronized. I didn't know enough about the story or remember enough about the story to skip to the end. So I enjoyed it. It was an experience. It was a good experience. I think it's, it's not a good movie if you don't like violence, because there's some violence, not a lot. I mean, it wasn't covert, but it was, it had some decent violence. But overall, I'd say it's like an A-.
I mean, I think you're grading slightly on a curve, but I mean, it's an enjoyable movie. It's certainly worth it. It looks great. The performances are great. Everybody from Tom Hardy to Emily Browning to Taron Egerton, even. Yeah.
Yeah.
They all did a really good job. I think very similar to a Conspiracy Theory, actually. I think this movie has an ending problem. I don't think they really knew how to end it, and it seemed kind of abrupt, not real thought out. Not enough to ruin the movie. Not as bad as Conspiracy Theory. And there are certainly lots of well-respected creatives who don't know how to manage endings, like Stephen King.
Well, 2 hours and 12 minutes, how much longer do you... I mean, that's the problem, though. Like, what do you put in the end?
I don't know. If I knew, I would be making movies instead of talking about them.
I agree. I know. Same thing. Like, I don't know anything about movies, but I talk about them all the time. So... yeah, but if you haven't seen it, I recommend it.
Yes.
I look forward to watching this again in a couple 5 years and revisiting it and seeing what I pick up. Not something I'm going to watch again this month, I don't think.
No, but if you told me Tom Hardy was making another movie where he played twins, I wouldn't ask you any more about it. I would just watch it.
Okay. I'm trying to think what other twins occur in history. In recent events, even. Mary-Kate and Ashley. Olsen twins. Tom Hardy is the Olsen twins.
I want a Tom Hardy remake of The Parent Trap. Where he plays the kids.
Oh, boy. Anything else about the movie?
No, I think we said it all.
Okay. Housekeeping. Let's see. What's going on? Things are on fire here. No surprise. It's the time of year. Although this year's fire is nowhere near what last year's fire was. At this time last year, particulate counts were in the 500s. And I couldn't... there was actually smoke in the house for 72 hours. Right now, there's a little bit of smoke outside where I live. I'm in a good area, luckily, knock on wood. So, no complaints. Holiday weekend is here. It's going to be Labor Day on Monday. So, I have a nice 3-day weekend, followed by a 3-day work week because it's my short week anyway. So, nice. I have 3 days of work, and then I got another 3-day weekend. So, it's kind of nice for me this time of year.
Good for you.
I started watching on Netflix because I kind of finished a couple things. We finished The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which I actually think was pretty funny. But then they had a Choose Your Own Adventure episode.
Oh, fun.
Which was lots of fun. So I liked it. It's got a good cast. So, but then out of something to watch, I wanted something that was interesting, but not... I wanted something I could watch and stop and bring and start back up again and not have to worry about pausing between. And so inexplicably, I picked the Leah Remini Scientology series. So
how is that?
I'm 1.5 episodes in. It's fascinating. It's not surprising at all. I mean, I'm not surprised by any of it. I don't know how much, I mean, obviously there's going to be some slant to it, as it were, the story. Mm-hmm. And you can make, I mean, lots of people theorize bad things about all types of religion. So I don't know Scientology enough to know how evil it is, but we see plenty of evil in Catholicism too. So nobody's hands are clean. But one of Leah Remini's co-stars or co-conspirators or friends or whatever is I think Mike, and I've just forgotten his last name, but he's Australian, and he has the most bizarre accent. Because it's like this Southern Baptist American Deep South Australian accent. The way he speaks is so weird. Sometimes he sounds Australian and sometimes he sounds like he's from South Carolina. And it just throws me because listening to him, it's just, I don't know. It's distracting. And then boyfriend Jesse and I started watching on Hulu, Only Murders in the Building. So
how's that?
It's interesting. It's fun a little bit. I'm not sure. We're only 2 episodes in. Jesse wants to, of course, watch more and more. I'm like, we're not racing through these episodes. There's not that many of them and they're coming out week by week. And I am not going to go back to the, I need to wait a week to watch something. So we're going to wait now. We're going to do the waiting up front.
you watched, the American Crime Story OJ series, right?
I did.
Did you watch the Versace one?
Not yet. Boyfriend Jesse has seen it. I have not.
Yeah.
He and you both have told me it was really good.
It is. It's really good. There's a new one starting on Tuesday.
Oh, God.
Have you seen it?
No. What? Maybe I have. What is it?
Impeachment.
Oh, no. No, I haven't.
It's about the Clinton Lewinsky scandal.
Oh. We have to go there.
It looks amazing.
Who plays Linda? Oh, because does Sarah Paulson play Linda Tripp?
Yes, she does. Clive Owen plays Clinton.
Clive Owen?
Clive Owen.
Wow. Who plays Hillary?
Edie Falco.
Oh, that's a good choice. Who plays Monica?
Bernie Feldstein. Beanie. Beanie.
I don't even know who that is. So
okay. She was in Booksmart. She's nope. Jonah Hill's sister.
Nope. It's a big nope. Okay. Yeah.
She's good. Monica Lewinsky is actually a producer on the series.
Oh. I've listened to her interviews in mm-hmm. recent years. And she's amazing.
Yeah, she has a really interesting perspective on the whole thing.
Yeah, and if anybody should, she should. So yep. Good for her. I'm really impressed by her. I'm glad that she has been able to survive the horribleness that she had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
On both sides.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, given the track record of American Crime Story, I'm looking forward to this quite a bit. I will be watching it week to week.
The OJ thing was amazing. I admit that it was impressive.
Yeah, I agree. And Versace was even better.
Okay. I'll put that on the list. I had a problem with it because I binged it like on a weekend. And boyfriend Jesse.
That's tough.
Boyfriend Jesse was like, because I just started watching it on a Saturday. I was home because Jesse works on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And so I started watching it on a Saturday because I didn't have anything to do. I mean, I was doing stuff around the house, but I was like cleaning the kitchen and cleaning the living room. And it's all in the background. But I was watching it in the background, except it turned out I wasn't doing anything but watching it in the background. I wasn't actually doing anything in the background.
Right.
So I didn't accomplish anything. But I watched 3 or 4 episodes, and then Jesse came home from work one afternoon and we watched like 3 or more episodes. And I think there was only like 9 or 10, but maybe there's 14. But anyway, so within 2 days I finished it.
Yeah, it was good.
And so I was like, oh, that was fascinating. You know, John Travolta's face was just nuts.
When's the last time you saw something and actually said, man, Cuba Gooding Jr. is good in this?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Well, he's playing a murderous crazy guy. So, yeah, there's that. And then the Goldman family. But again, you know, Sarah Paulson.
Mm-hmm.
She's amazing. I adore her.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah, so I'll put that on the list. It's probably already on the list, actually, if I'm honest. What else? Anything else? Anything else is going on? It's been pretty quiet here. Weather's decent, cooling down. Numbers are up. That's not good. Don't know what October is going to be like. That's not great.
We officially postponed our October Hawaii trip. The girls were not thrilled with that decision, but we don't really have a choice at this point. They're not vaccinated. Hawaii's, you know, over capacity in their hospital system. Their governor is begging people not to come.
You were guys were going to go to Hawaii?
Yeah. Yeah, mid October. We booked that back in February, back when surely our children were going to be vaccinated by then,
or we'd be through the bulk of this.
Yeah, yep. So
they're pretty
bummed, but hopefully they can get vaccinated, and the numbers might die down by February is our hope, and we'll try again.
Yeah, I don't know what Vegas is going to be like. I'm losing hope. I'm trying to be optimistic and I'm really pray that things are good, but I can't, you know, I can't right now. I'm under a travel ban. I'm not allowed to leave anywhere. I'm not allowed to go anywhere for work. So, mandated no travel till October 18th after the 18th. And that may change.
yeah.
Boosters are going to be coming. We're not sure now. The government's waffling back and forth on the boosters. I don't know what's going on with that. Yeah. I was looking at the dashboard locally for hospital beds and not good. Numbers are not good. We are double the number of COVID cases now in the hospital system. There are double the number of COVID cases than there were at the highest peak last summer.
Yeah.
So that's not good. So I don't know. I hate to cancel October. I hope we don't have to. But then it makes me cautious about Christmas too. So
yeah, everything's up in the air again.
So I guess I'm glad, not glad that I had to come up for a month to see my family. Mixed blessing, I guess, because I got to see everybody, but, you know, wish I would have done it under happier circumstances, but I mean, I guess it's pretty happy, right? Good. But yeah. Could have been much worse.
The ultimate outcome was pretty good.
Yeah.
But, oh yeah. Speaking of, our parents acquired the audio of our father's 911 call. And I listened to that in its entirety. That was pretty rough.
Well, did you expect it wouldn't be?
No, it was still rough. Everybody on the call, our father and the dispatcher did a really, really good job It was still tough. And we haven't really told that entire story on here yet.
Yeah.
But
we need to encapsulate it at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so our parents went down and visited the dispatch center down in Sadotna, the ones who handled the call. There was a Facebook post or two about it, and it was pretty sweet. Sounds like they had a nice time visiting and thanking everyone.
Yeah. Well, I think the point was that, I mean, the doctors have made this point too, that all the ICU staff and the heart ICU staff made the same point. We don't often get a lot of successes out of our patients. So when we get somebody who gets to walk out and walk away back to their life, that makes us feel good to see that. So I think it's good for the dispatchers to see something positive. Because, 95% of the time people don't survive these types of incidents. So, knock on wood, we were very lucky. So technology and good healthcare and, all kinds of planning and preparation, just turns out things were just right.
They sure were.
I can't imagine what the 911 phone call was like when Derek collapsed. I can't imagine what it sounded like. So, I haven't listened to the call yet. I have a copy of it. I'll listen to it at some point. I'm fascinated to hear the dispatcher and how she responded. That's what I'm more curious about. We'll see. I don't think probably the parents need to listen to it. I don't think they should. So
no, I was talking with mom and dad about it on Tuesday, and I compared it to the Werner Herzog documentary, The Grizzly Man, where he listens to the recording of Timothy Treadwell getting eaten by the bear, and then tells his girlfriend, maybe his wife, tells her, you don't ever need to listen to that.
Yeah, you don't want that in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. I can understand and identify with that. So, next week is you and Brother E, is that right?
No, it's you guys, Stargate.
Oh, that's right.
And then the week after is me and Eric doing Rubicon.
Mm.
Also a show you should watch if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's on the list. And then all three of us, Spider-Man, apparently.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Who is Spider-Man in that movie?
Tom Holland.
Okay, I should have guessed that.
And then the premiere episode of Not in a Creepy Way for all of 2021, you and I are talking about the seminal 1980s television show, Knight Rider.
Oh, God, I better start watching. Oh, man,
we need to agree on a curated episode list.
Oh, we're not going to just watch all of them.
It's like 66 hours of TV.
I got it in me. Don't.
I don't.
I do. Challenge accepted. Man.
I do not.
Well, I will defer to you. Although we absolutely have to do the Kit versus Carr versus Goliath. That has to come to fruition.
No doubt. We have to do the Amnesia episode.
The evil Devin and evil. Yeah, the whole, yeah. Oh my God. Yes,
Garth Knight.
Just Garth. Oh God, it's going to be awful. Holy God. Okay, that'd be good. So
take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother J. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother J. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.